Hey there. Hi there. This is Nicole Falcone, and you are listening to Technicolored Glasses. This is the podcast where I discuss what I love to talk about most. That would be film. This season on the podcast, we are discussing the year 1994 and all of the amazing films that were released that year, known as one of the great years in film. We are covering 30 of those films. Which honestly is just kind of grazing the surface. But that is what we're up to. We are on episode 4. So we've done Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, Reality Bites, and 4 Weddings and a Funeral. We are going to tackle our next 1994 film in just a moment. First of all, I want to thank you for listening, for tuning in, always much appreciated. If you enjoy this podcast, could you please talk to people about it, tell them about it, rate, review, subscribe. It really, really does make a difference. Helps me keep this little podcast afloat, keep me doing this, and just really spreads the word. And then, of course, keep listening yourselves. So, so appreciated. You can email me at technicoloredglassespod@gmail.com if you would like to share any of your thoughts or talk about any of the thoughts I share. You can also find me on social media, on Instagram at CinePhem. CinePhemme, or Blue Sky at CinePhem. I am also on Letterboxd, where I do have a list that is dedicated to every film that has been discussed in the first season of this podcast. The fifth spot, the search for my fifth favorite film director. But I am currently updating that with a list specifically for this second season, all the films that I discuss, and then just, you know, all the fun on Letterboxd. So you can find me there. And that is going to do it for the business end of this. But before we get to the film that we're going to discuss, I did want to just talk about what I've been watching lately. Watching some docs, always watching some docs and true crime, but some of note on Hulu, there is a documentary called The Contestant. I think that's what it's called. Yeah, The Contestant. And it is about this Japanese fellow who was a contestant on a reality show. He didn't really realize that's what it was, however. He knew it was a competition. And it wound up him in a room with absolutely nothing except what he could win through sweepstakes, magazine sweepstakes. And unbeknownst to him, it was televised for millions of viewers. It was a reality show. He had no idea. It is really a mind-blowing concept. And the documentary has interviews with him and with the creator of this whole fiasco. He has kind of a Dr. Moreau vibe to him. Really interesting stuff. And honestly, one of those that is truly, fact is stranger than fiction. It is a bizarre story and it is a really, really great documentary. So I recommend checking that out. I also just watched on Netflix. Yeah. Netflix, the, TLC documentary, which was also great. Definitely interesting to hear from Chili and T-Boz. My only disappointment in that is that they did not discuss what in the hell they were thinking with that reality show that they did way back when to find a new member of TLC after Lisa Left Eye very tragically died in a car accident. They clearly were broken up about her loss and continue to be, and not downplaying that at all. The documentary is great, really delves into all that, but that is one of those blaring points in their history that I always was somewhat flabbergasted by and kind of wanted to hear how in the world that came about, and they just really ignored that it ever happened. So no answers there on that front, but still a really worthwhile documentary, especially if you just really remember TLC as I do. You know, the 90s, well, the 90s hip hop and, music scene, but TLC was a big deal. And, so very, very interesting watch. And then, of course, just like most everyone else, I have watched, Baby Reindeer, which is not a documentary, but kind of is as the creator, of course. It is based on his one man show, and it is really a story of his own, experience with a stalker. But so much more than that. I can't overstate the depths of this, this television show, and, just the surprises and just the, unique, it's highly unique. It's very, it just, yeah, lots of depths, lots of layers, fascinating. And there's a lot of talk about it, of course, and of the interview that has been done with the real life Martha. No, I have not watched it because I will not be watching anything that Piers Morgan decided was a good idea, but definitely an interesting thing. But the show itself, worth the hype, but beyond that, an amazing, amazing experience that I highly recommend you checking out. Okay, so 1994 in film. This time around, we are discussing a movie that at the time of its release was a flop, lost a lot of money, got mixed reviews, and I have to admit, at the time, I did not fully appreciate, but I do now. We're going to go back, we're going to talk about it, and we are going to talk about its writer, director, John Waters. I'm talking about this 1994 film released on April 13th, 1994. I'm, of course, talking about Serial Mom.
All units, Serial Mom is headed south on Keswick. Proceed with caution. She is armed and fucking nuts.
So let's take just a minute and let's talk about John Waters, iconic filmmaker, human being, quite frankly. John Waters was born and raised in the Baltimore area. And most of his films take place there as well. Just an iconic filmmaker, known very early on in the 70s for his transgressive filmography, as in just shock cinema, meant to shock and awe and go so much against the grain that it just turns everything on its head. Gross and shocking visuals. We're talking Desperate Living and Female Troubles and Pink Flamingos, infamously. All of those had Divine, an iconic figure. She was a drag queen who was in pretty much every John Waters film. They were tight. Divine was pretty amazing. If you don't know anything about Divine, go ahead and look her up. But she played very prominently in John Waters' early films. And then John Waters, I feel he has sort of like three different eras. So there was that real transgressive era, 70s era, trashy, camp. Honestly, really a champion for the underdog, for the weirdo, LGBTQ community, of which John Waters is a part of. Just really like a smorgasbord of strange people, including Divine, but there was Mink Stole was a big one. You know, he wound up later on using like Tracy Lords and we'll get into that. I'm not going to get into that quite yet, but just weirdos unite, underdogs, the ones who get kicked around. Let's showcase them. And he did it beautifully, and he's quite beloved for it. Love him or hate him, John Waters is an important figure in the history of cinema. And again, just as a person, he has a pretty phenomenal documentary about him, an autobiography. He's just pretty fantastic. So if you're not familiar, that's just a slight rundown. But his second era after the like really transgressive stuff was, I would say, began in like 1981 with Polyester, which I love. Great, great movie. Again, with Divine, Tab Hunter, who was a, you know, Hollywood heartthrob of the 50s, 60s, but he was a closet homosexual. He did not actually come out until his own autobiography in 2005, but to use him as a love interest for Divine was a very cheeky kind of wink-wink and sort of a freeing, wonderful thing for Tab Hunter. Just kind of a cool thing. Just really, again, showing how John Waters and his films and his posse or a place for the underdog, the kicked around, the minorities. And it's just like, it's like a giant strange hug. And Polyester is really great, but what's funny is it ushered in what would be considered more of a mainstream John Waters. But when I say mainstream, I mean, let's be fair. There's nothing really mainstream about it, but it was definitely just toned down for him. But these are the films that got more universal love. Polyester was kind of the beginning of that, but obviously the big film for him, probably his most beloved, is Hairspray, which of course has gone on to be a Broadway musical and then a movie musical. And but the original, starring Ricky Lake and Divine as her mother, classic. I love it. But it was a huge hit and mainstream for him. So there was that, and then Crybaby, and then Serial Mom, which of course we're here to talk about. But then his third era, I guess I would say, is kind of like more of a return to the trash, but I would argue not quite as successfully for whatever reason. Maybe trying too hard, maybe just the moment has passed, but things like A Low Down Dirty Shame, just not quite the same as, you know, the OGs. So I think his era of trash and then his, again, in quotes, mainstream eras are where it's at for him. Most successful in different ways. Because I feel that even when he started making things that were more appealing to a larger audience, I don't think he sold out. I mean, he's not having anyone eat poop, but there's some weird stuff going on. It's not as though it's all like just straight up, you know, mass market kind of subject matter. Just maybe a little more palatable, maybe like dressing up, you know, Brussels sprouts for the main screen. I don't know. But, in any case, in the midst of this, you know, more successful era of John Waters, in 1994 came Serial Mom, starring Kathleen Turner as the titular mom.
And her husband is Sam Waterston. Her kids are Matthew Lillard and Ricky Lake. And the film is a satire. It is also just a dark as dark can be comedy, a horror film, just a lot of things all rolled into one. But basically the gist is that Beverly is this housewife in the suburbs, seemingly perfect woman in a perfect family. And of course, underneath all of it is simmering the heart and soul of a serial killer. Beverly, she does prank calls to one of her neighbors, Dottie, who is played by Mink Stole, mainstay of John Waters. And she says all of these very crass, very offensive things to her just for kicks, just to screw with her. And, you know, basically, the suburbs, the you know, lily white perfection of the suburban area is, of course, taken down a bit in this satire, in that it's really these people and this neighborhood and this whole setup that is corrupt and dark and not nearly as upstanding as they would hope for you to think. So Beverly, I mean, of course, is really just doing what has to be done, right? But Kathleen Turner is absolutely hilarious. She plays it just absolutely to perfection. She actually kind of plays it straight, which is what makes it really, really funny. And of course, it is very campy. But her performance is not actually campy. It's pretty straightforward, which, like I said, is really funny. And then Sam Waterston is great as her just bewildered husband and the kids. And Patty Hearst has a cameo involving Labor Day. In fact, this film, as I said earlier, I watched when I was younger and like around when it came out and was not a huge fan of it. I did not see it for many years. I saw it again because my lovely, my partner in crime, she really loves the film and would watch it on Labor Day. Yes, it is a holiday film. And so we watched it and I've watched it several times since and definitely greatly appreciate it for what it is. It's pretty epic. And at the time of its release, I wasn't the only one who didn't appreciate it. It was not a success by any means, but it has, of course, since become something of a cult classic. It found quite the life on video, as many a wonderful, wonderful, unloved films do. They find that love, and it has, thankfully, and I think has been sort of reevaluated. But I think it's definitely one of the highlights of John Waters' career, especially that mid-era that I talked about. So funny, so dark. Also, also bloody, and it's sort of sending up America's obsession with true crime, with reality, a reality TV type thing before it was really a thing. It did precede the OJ trial, which happened the next year. And so it was very prescient. And what happens in the film as far as the huge media uproar that surrounds Beverly and her family is not at all far from the truth. And so watching it now, of course, it's completely believable, really, in its absurdity, because our actual lives and the media's coverage has become so incredibly absurd. if anything, it's more relevant now than it was then. And like I said, it's just funny. And it plays off of a lot of things. Like at one point, Beverly is, going to defend herself, much like Ted Bundy did. He certainly wasn't the first or the last. It's just a complete circus. A bloody good time. So if you have never seen Serial Mom, definitely check it out. Maybe check it out this Labor Day. It can be your Labor Day movie. Like I said, it definitely, if language and some bloody kills offend you, just don't do it. But otherwise, give it a go. Good stuff. Good times. Again, Kathleen Turner, just pitch perfect. So funny. Also, a bit of a precursor, I would say, to Deadly Women, for us true crime fans, that obviously Deadly Women with, Candace DeLong is classic. Absolutely. But part of the humor, of course, of Serial Mom is that Kathleen Turner's character, Beverly, is this blonde, beautiful, perfect woman. And so, of course, nobody really believes that she could possibly do anything so horrible. And of course, if you watch Deadly Women, you know that that is absolutely not true. But that is another thing that's played off of. And so, again, just quite perfect. Kathleen Turner is just quite perfect in that capacity.
Officers, life doesn't have to be ugly. See, look at the birds out there. Listen to their call. Hoo-wee, hoo-wee.
That's going to do it for this episode. And on the next one, we are going to continue our journey through 1994 with a very dark horse indeed. A really essential film of 1994 that has lived on and is actually going to be having a remake coming out this year, I believe, which I have some feelings about. You probably have some feelings about too. We'll talk about it next time. Join me. Talk at you later.
You can't wear white shoes after Labor Day.
That's not true anymore.
Yes, it is. Didn't your mother ever tell you?